Thank you. Welcome, everyone. It's good to see you all. I want to celebrate the participation of two special human beings on this board meeting today. The first person, I'm very grateful for all of you being here, first of all, and I can't adequately appreciate all of you being here. But formerly, Betsy Hamilton was voted by our board governance committee meeting to serve as a formal board member long term at ECS, and we are extremely excited to have Dr. Betsy Hamilton on our board. So I want to formally welcome her. We're going to be voting her on soon. And then I'm also extremely grateful to Denise Berger for having introduced us to Herb Sims. Herb's is the Director of Equity and Inclusion at Northrop Grumman, and he is strongly contemplating serving on our board and is joining us today as a potential board member. So thank you, Herb, for being with us. And with that, I can go ahead and share my screen and we can initiate the formal board meeting. But I just want to make sure that we appreciated the participation of those two humans.
Thank you. Thank you to Denise, and thank you for Nas for the introduction. And absolutely. Welcome the opportunity to come and share and be a part of the board. So I'm here today as a visitor to see how things go, but pretty excited to work with you all. And big ups to Denise, because she was the one who's been working on me for about a year right now, believe it or not. But my schedule is just really dynamic and I travel quite often, but I'm grateful that I'm finally here to be with you all this evening. Thank you.
Welcome, Herb.
Thank you.
Welcome, and all those who are new to this, welcome. As we normally do, before we kick off the meeting, we recite the mission and the values. And as a soon-to-be board member, I've asked Betsy Hamilton to kick us off this evening with reciting our mission and values. So if you can start that, Betsy, that would be fantastic.
Thank you very much. I'd be happy to. Mission: reimagine public education in low-income communities of color to prepare conscious, critical thinkers who are equipped to graduate from college and create a more equitable and sustainable world. Values: justice. We examine bias, racism, and prejudice. We deliver culturally responsive curricula. We succeed when students' race and class cease to predict their level of achievement. Community: we care, we collaborate, we respect the rights and voices of our stakeholders. Curiosity: we question, we explore, we innovate. Sustainability: we think globally and act locally. We adapt. We encourage systems thinking to create a sustainable future. Leadership: we listen, we think critically, we advocate, we shift public discourse. We are our own superheroes.
Fantastic. Thank you, Betsy.
Thank you.
Again, welcome, everyone. Thank you for being here this evening. As we kick this off, Jeremiah, obviously we're recording this and you have the video as well. So you are you have the attendance and the guests.
Yes, noted.
So with that, I will call the meeting to order and ask for a motion to approve the agenda.
I motion to approve the agenda, Zena.
Thank you, Zena. Do I have a second?
I second, Denise.
Thank you, Denise. Okay. I just want to make sure, is there any other board member? I have Denise, Kennedy, Zena, Thelma, and Anthony as current board members. Any other board members arrived since the start? Okay, Denise, you can say aye. Aye. Kennedy.
Aye.
Zena.
Aye.
Thelma. Thelma,
aye.
Are you on mute? Thank you, Thelma. And Anthony, aye. The agenda has been approved. Are there any presentations from the floor on non-agenda items? Okay, are there any presentations from the floor on agenda items? Okay, and I will move to the discussion items and updates and turn it over to the principals for their updates.
So we're grateful to have the two middle school principals sharing updates about their campuses today. And we're starting with Dave. Dave, do you want to share screen or do you want me to?
You can share screen. I think it will just stay on yours. Thank you for having us, and we're excited to start a new school year. As we went into summer professional development, I had the good fortune of being part of a Green Ambassador grant associated professional development, where we are going to create curriculum with the watershed for our students, and then it can be used with them like open source with others. And so in doing so, at the Gardena Wetland Willows Preserve, which is in walking distance of our school, we had the good fortune of hosting an indigenous woman who comes from the Gabrielino tribe and is a descendant of the Tongva tribe. And one of the things she shared with us regarding the sage of the wetland willows was an anecdote that I've carried with me since then, and I've carried into our professional development and have even talked to our students and our families about it. But she says that the practice of burning sage, brushing, I think is what it's called. But that the practice has become very popular recently. But if you're doing it with purchased sage, you're defeating the purpose. And that folks don't actually believe that your indigenous people don't believe you're getting what you think you're getting. People tend to use it to cleanse the energy and prepare space and kind of like prepare it for positivity. But what the people of her tribe believe is that you need to have reciprocity with all living things. And so if you are burning sage that you do not have a personal relationship with, you haven't given anything before you're asking for it. So there's no reciprocity in it. And so you don't actually get what you want. And so she communicated to us that the sage either has to be cultivated by you or by the person that gifted it to you. And in doing so, the person that is gifting you what they put into the plant, and then now you can ask for something in return. But that all healthy relationships have reciprocity. Fruit trees will stop bearing fruit if you don't take the fruit from it. And so it really had me thinking about reciprocity between not only my staff, but the school community, the students, the families, and even myself. I think the past couple of years, because of the pandemic and all the extra strains that it has put on educators at ECS and at my site in particular, I can speak for my site in particular, we've done a lot of things for families, for students, for staff. And we kind of pulled back on asking for things in return. And what this session made me realize is that that's not actually what people want. People want to give and take. They want that reciprocity. So that's the approach that we're taking this year as we go into a new year, a year removed from distance learning. We're going to ask for reciprocity in all relationships, whether it's school to board, meet the partners in Kenya, or principal to teacher.
I think we're having issues hearing, at least on my end.
Parent, we're asking for that capacity. And so in that, can you hear me right now?
I think your connectivity is a bit suspect at this moment.
Let me move a little closer to the house. Give me 1 second. How's this? Can you hear me better?
Right now we can, yes. Please continue.
Okay, so let's see. You might get some visitors in the background, but that'll be okay. So with that idea of reciprocity, we landed on our theme of my world, your world, and our world for the purposes of planning everything we do related to our priority work, our critical thinking work, and our advisory work, recognizing that our students have their own existence, and so do our staff members, that is independent of each other. We have to recognize that when we walk into any space, other people have their world that is independent of us, and together we have our ECMS Gardena world. And so that's how we've been approaching the work this year and rooting our work in our focus humans, ensuring that when it comes to connectedness and that every child is a blessing, that we are paying close attention in particular to the connectedness to our community for our Black students. So we have a plan for that. And then when it comes to achievement and self-agency, we're focusing on our English learners and our students with exceptionalities. We believe that if we can move the needle with those two equity focus groups, we'll move the needle for everyone across the board. Can you go to the next slide, Arnaz? So coming into the school year, we had our wonderful summer bridge. We had over 100 sixth graders participate and 15 to 20 seventh and eighth graders that were new to us. We had quite a bit of movement out of the area this summer from seventh and eighth graders that moved not to any other school in the area, but moved away. So during summer bridge, we had a week full of students coming on campus, engaging in project-based learning, going on a field trip, building our community, going to the Wetland Willows. And our current enrollment right now is at 117 for sixth grade, 115 for seventh, 119 for eighth grade. And we're chipping away at those numbers. You'll see the wait list on the right-hand side. Some of that wait list there includes some of the offers that have been made. But we are on track to have the highest enrollment Gardena's had, at least in my tenure there, to begin the year. So I think Zeno will be happy to see those numbers.
Can we go to the next slide? That is so huge. Kudos.
Thank you, Allison. Our team has been doing a really good job of closing the loop when families enroll. And I give a lot of credit to our new office manager, Gabby. We had our back to school night, and it was an in-person event. And it felt like a regular school year for the first time. It was pretty amazing. Close to the families of 200 students attended. I know that because they had the option to sign up for parent conferences, and over 190 families have already signed up for their parent conferences. So we're pretty set for that already in October. We set students up with passports and guides, and they were the tour guides. We made it very clear this was not parent conference night. Your student is going to guide you and walk you around. And we had healthy snacks, free healthy snacks given out, and we had Chamber of Commerce out providing community service opportunities. And it was great. Our eighth graders walked their parents through the eighth grade culmination requirements. Traditionally, the first touch point for eighth grade culmination requirements has always been our counselor. This year, it's going to be our eighth graders. This was the first touch point at back to school night at parent conferences. There'll be student-led conferences, and the eighth graders will say to their parents, I'm on track to culminate with honors. I'm on track to culminate, or I'm not on track to culminate, and this is how you can support me. And they're going to be leading that work from the very beginning. And we move to the next slide. And that goes back to our reciprocity. A lot of that culmination requirements in the back in the past has always been our counselor doing stuff for the families instead of our students taking the ownership of that. And then the other thing I wanted to show you, and I'll open it up for any questions you may have, is we have our focus. This is what our learning and our culture and our service looks like. On the right, I'll start off on the right-hand side. It was our Gardena cleanup day, where our family signed up on at our back-to-school night. And then within a couple of days, they were at the Gardena Wetland Willows Preserve, cleaning up the community, earning their community service. And we had some students that are not in eighth grade, who have no community service requirement, who just volunteered for it. The Chamber of Commerce of Harbor Gateway North will be hosting a Gardena cleanup the first Saturday of every month. And the home base will be ECMS Gardena. So if you want to come help clean up the community, just reserve the first Saturday of every month, and we'll start off at the campus and we'll clean up the surrounding area and see how far we can get. In terms of culture, we're honoring Hispanic Heritage or Latinx Heritage Month. I personally have done a terrible job of honoring this as a principal because the first year that I had the opportunity, it was distance learning. And that was difficult. And then last year, we were down some staff members, and like I blinked and looked up and the month had passed and I had done very little. We felt very guilty about it. But we have a lot of representation being put up, a lot of flags, We're pushing out leaders and heroes through advisory, through our social media. And on October 3rd, we have a Leaders Like Me event where we're recruiting, in particular, Latinx leaders of the community. And I have all those arrows pointing because I want you all to share it with your networks. It's in the notes of this slide. So if someone could copy and paste, there's a Canva, there's a friendly social media friendly flyer that you can post. There's also the form for people to sign up, and they can sign up either to present virtually or come on campus. We always encourage people to come on campus, but some people can't, and we've had some really engaging virtual presenters. And then on the left-hand side, you'll see just a couple of snapshots of students learning and hopefully engaged in critical thinking. We've been having a heavy focus. I'm sure Danielle will talk about it, if not today, throughout every board meeting we have, our focus on ensuring that we're planning for critical thinking and that the intellectual lift in any classroom session is going primarily on students. So you'll see the hands-on learning and students answering each other's questions. I was in a class today and students had questions, and instead of answering the question, the teacher asked the students, why don't you consult your ABO partner and then you all tell me whether or not this person's on track. And it was pretty great to see that lift going back to students instead of them coming in, sitting and receiving. Our teachers have engaged, have grabbed onto the concept of reciprocity and students being teachers in the classroom of each other. So thank you for that, Farnaz, and I'll pass it over to you and to Dr. Matthews.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Dr. Matthews, and I'm the principal of ECMS Inglewood. I actually want to ask for Nas permission, especially with the amazing facilitation and the presentation that Mr. Trejo had just shared, if we can actually just lean in more into his, and I can just go next time. I think I would like for the board to be able to interact and ask questions, especially ask questions of leaders like me. So I would love to actually just give you more airtime. The only thing I would like to show you actually is the last slide is just, we're having a Harvest Fest in November. So if you could just take a look at the Harvest Fest date, please put it on your calendars, put it in your phone. November 19th from 9 to 1 is our annual Harvest Fest. And this is going to be our 10th year. So we are really excited and we are going to really do a lot of amazing things at this Harvest Festival. And we're also looking for volunteers. So yes, save the date, Harvest Fest, ECMS Inglewood from 9 to 1. But I would like to also just give it back to Dave. There are some great things that are happening and I would love to just use some of that time to just present to you at the next board meeting. Farnaz, you're on silent.
Thank you. Thank you, Geneva. And with that, I just want to open up for any questions you guys have for Dave or comments or.
The Leaders Like Me event, we like two types of speakers tend to have a lot of success. People that just have really cool jobs and are good at telling stories, or people that have a story similar to our students or grew up in a community like our students. That tends to grab their interest the most.
I'm happy to ask a question if there's time for it.
Yes, Allison, go for it.
I'm curious, Dave, if you could share a little bit about the greening up of the campus and some strategies you all have adopted this year to make that happen.
So like those of you that have been around on the board for a while or have been in these meetings for a while may have heard that one of the pieces of feedback that I got when I first became principal a couple of years back is that some of our staff felt like the E in ECMS Gardena was lowercase and they wanted it to be uppercase again. And they wanted it to like have that back. And so we've been going back at that intentionally through the watershed grant. We've been able to connect and bring in some additional staffing. We have a partner that works at the Gardena Wetland Willows and is coming on campus twice a week, is helping prepare the campus to make sure that the campus is an additional textbook for our teachers so that the lift isn't so heavy on the planting, ensuring things are native, but essentially is greening up the campus with in conjunction with our facilities team. Our GA students are doing part of the planting, but through the work with our partners and Allison and like even Enviroscapes and Mike Garcia, we're ensuring that the campus is more of a textbook from which teachers can naturally lean into, which is nice. I think in the past couple of years, it's kind of been like claim some space, plant what you can, but hasn't been so much of a focus on natives and intentionality. And now we have someone who's curating that for us. And it's been a breath of fresh air. We have two aquaponic systems upstairs on our patios, and one of them is owned by our GA class. The other one is going to be owned by our after-school program. So we're finding people to champion pockets on campus and letting them run with it.
Thank you, Dave, so much for being here. With that, I'm going to take us back to the agenda. What's next on the agenda is the leadership updates, and I'm going to go ahead and start that. I've asked Jen Fenton, who's our Director of Health and Safety, to do a quick update on our health and safety efforts, and I'm going to do a quick update on recruitment so that we get to have enough time for our study session today. So with that, I'm going to share screen again.
Thanks, everyone, for allowing me to take a few moments. What I am very happy to share is for the first time in, you know, probably the year that I've been at ECS, my focus has not been completely COVID. And that is a sign of how our world is changing and how the pandemic is becoming, you know, a little less prevalent. It's still there. We're still concentrating on it, but we're doing a lot of safety. And we really wanted to highlight some of the action items that we've been involved in to keep our students and our staff really just feeling secure on our campuses. We did an audit in the early summer. I walked around every single campus with a campus engineer, and we identified some potential hazards, whether it was gates, visitor protocol signage, places that we could improve and work together to really hone in on some of those safety measures. This is an ongoing conversation. It was the audits weren't meant to be punitive, but really just a place, you know, a baseline that we could go from there. We are working with law enforcement, thanks to Paul Fries. I know that Farnaz has spoken about him to you all. He is a gift, and we are very happy to have him as one of our ambassadors. We are conducting several emergency drills. This is what happens in fall. Fire, lockdown, earthquake, that is the California shakeout, which will take place at the end of October. And finally, we are doing active shooter preparedness trainings. This is something that we haven't had at ECS for probably 6 years. We are bringing this training to every single campus, and it's a chance for each of the staff to really have conversations with a ASCIP certified instructor and start thinking about, unfortunately, what could happen if there's an active shooter on one of our sites. Going back to COVID, because my job is health and safety, we have been looking at recent trends. We've been looking at LADPH numbers. We've been looking at schools around us. And ECS is by far the most conservative. We are actually the only school that I know of that still has our students and staff that are masked indoors. So given the downward trend, given the case rates, given hospitalizations that are all declining, we thought this would be a good time to ask our community if they felt comfortable making a masking indoors optional policy. So we surveyed all stakeholders, students, staff, and families last week and the beginning of this week. These numbers are reported from today. We've had a lot of responses. And as you can see, anywhere from the upper 70s to 80s, people are in favor of optional masking indoors. So our proposal is to make this policy shift beginning October 3rd, which is the first Monday of the month. We'd like to communicate with all stakeholders, provide an FAQ in case some questions come up, really hone in on our safety protocols and ensure that everybody understands what happens if, in fact, there's a positive, if there's a close contact. We continue to watch community rates, knowing that if there's another surge, we may require masking again, but we think this is a good time to make this change.
Any questions for Jen about our masking or our safety efforts? I just want to encourage you to feel comfortable to ask any questions you have at this time.
Hi, this is Kennedy. I have a question.
Yes, Kennedy.
Okay, sorry, I'm driving, so I hope the noise is not too bad. But given that today we heard, yesterday, that President Biden declared the pandemic to be over, but we still have an issue with COVID, I see what the next steps are. But in terms of long term, are we going to continue to enforce some of the county in it? The county is lifting the criteria. So are we going to be more conservative than the county? What are the thoughts around that?
So that's a great question for Naz. Do you want me to take that or do you want to?
I'm happy to take it. I think that we've been very responsive to our community. And so the decision to stay masked as long as we did is that our community for all of this time has not been ready to remove masks earlier. The shift has really started to happen in the last month, and we're very grateful to see it. We have promised our community that if we do move to making masks optional, which we do plan to do, as we do that, we're going to continue to watch data on a regular basis. And if there is another surge, or if there is anything else that comes out that requires us to take action, we will act quickly and do whatever we can to keep everyone healthy and safe. So we have been more conservative, but I do believe our community has been more impacted by COVID than many communities adjacent to us. And so we've been responsive to their comfort. And I think it's because of this that we've been able to maintain really high attendance rates throughout this time and high engagement rates with our community.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I'm going to jump to our HR update. I just want to be, Sarah would normally be here. She got to go to a conference with Charter School Growth Fund with a focus on talent development. And I'm really grateful that she got to be there for a few days. But I think that we want you to be aware that one of our most significant challenges for this year has been hiring. And that's true of all district schools adjacent to us. It's frequently been at meetings where leaders of schools are almost in tears about the reality of hiring at this time. We had 72 openings this year, 15 of which were at the new high school. And we still have some openings right now. And if you know of any art teachers who are interested in a role, this is probably our most important role, because it's we have two classes right now with subs and art instructor type models, but we really would love long-term talented art teachers. If you could think of anyone, these are the other roles. I will share this presentation with you guys after this meeting, and also information that you can get out to your networks if you know of people.
Farnaz, I don't think we're seeing the screen you're seeing.
Ooh.
Oh, no, we are. Sorry, my bad.
Thanks, Danielle. Okay. 55 people have been hired since March 2022. That's a lot. That's more than we've ever done in a year. A lot of those roles have been SPED related. So we had five roles which were very important and critical. And I want to do a shout out for Michael Martucci. We told at the start of this year, we said this is like the top priority, drop everything. And he did. And he used his network and his partners and friends and made it possible for us to recruit this number of SPED leaders and teachers. So special appreciation for him. Our HR team has been working tirelessly. There have been 8 math science roles, which are also hard to fill. And we've stayed consistent. I think our mission has continued to draw educators that are aligned with our mission. And we have 85% who identify as people of color, which data has shown are proven to be more effective serving our student population, which we're very proud of. And we've worked with a lot of partner agencies. You will see that as you look at a budget, that we've gone over some of the expected costs on salaries here and there. And that's because we've had to work with outside agencies, some of which cost a significant amount to help recruitment efforts to make this possible. But I'm very proud of where we are. But I do want to be transparent that this has been a very significant challenge for us. I also wanted to make you aware.
There's a hand raised by our board member, Denise. Right.
Thank you. I can't see anything since I'm screen sharing. So thank you, Jeremiah. Yes, Denise.
Yes. Hi. What are you looking for, like a full-time art person, or what are the parameters for the art?
Our goal would be to find full-time art educators with credentials. However, given the fact that it's been so difficult for us to find people with the appropriate credentials for teaching art right now, I think after years and years of telling people don't teach art, there are no positions, the reality of supply and demand has caught up with us, and there really aren't that many people who are credentialed as art teachers at this time. So we have also created a plan for if there's an art instructor, someone without a credential who is passionate about teaching art, we could bring them and pair them with someone who has a credential in that class to be able to support the students until we can find a credentialed teacher long-term.
Mm. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Denise.
Wouldn't it even be possible to have two part-time teachers?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. It would be possible. Thank you, Allison, for bringing me back to Denise's question. Yes, it would be possible to have two part-time teachers.
Yeah, I might have someone. I have to check with them to see what their availability is. So I'll let you know.
Thank you. Another shout out to Denise for continuing to bring really great resources to us. We appreciate you. Okay, I'll move on. Some of you know this. After many, many years of service at ECS, Julie Vo, our director of development, has gone on to be the director of policy at the Orange County Asian Pacific Islander Community Org. And I'm super excited for her. This is a passion purpose alignment for her. And she's very excited to be there. Within a month, she was quoted in the LA Times in her advocacy efforts. She's awesome, and we will continue to have her as a partner and as a friend. What I wanted to make you guys aware of is that I'm doing a little bit of a shift or a tweak to our development efforts for the next year. We've been able to secure Lisa Clary Rialli, who's a capital campaign consultant who is well known in the nonprofit sector as a leader in development and capital campaigns. And she has come in at a very reasonable amount for us to be a consultant to lead our capital campaign efforts. We've also hired, this was hired in advance of Julie's announcement, Kelly Berry, who's a community outreach and engagement specialist. She's going to help us with student outreach, community engagement, partnership development, which is all part of what Julie used to do in the past. Jen Fenton, who's our director of health and safety, has a background in development and will be supporting in some of the grant writing and reporting efforts. And Anthony Joeed has kindly volunteered to help call board members to secure board member donations to ECS. So thank you, Anthony, for raising your hand to help with that effort. As a heads up, we are planning to shift our development requirement for board members. And instead of asking for a set amount, we're asking board members to make a donation that's meaningful to you and your family. That's something that we're doing in order to recruit appropriate board members who are passionate about our purpose and aligned and can serve our long-term goals, and not necessarily because we're looking to our board for fund development at this time. And we, of course, appreciate your support and want it, but didn't want that to make a limiting factor in who we could engage on our board. So with that, I already shared, and I'm extremely excited to have Herb Sims and Betsy Hamilton here. Super grateful for you guys both being here. So with that, I'm going to stop sharing and take us back. Oh, sorry. To our agenda. Any questions for me? Any questions at all? Don't hesitate to jump in, guys. Okay. So here we are on item C, Anthony.
Yes. So as Farnaz mentioned at the beginning of the call, we are blessed and thankful that Betsy Hamilton has been working with us, and the governance committee has recommended that we, as a board, approve her as a new board member. So I'd like to take an action item and ask for a motion to vote Dr. Betsy Hamilton as a new ECS board member. Do I have a motion?
You have a motion. I motion Denise Berger to vote in Betsy Hamilton.
Do I have a second?
Kennedy second.
Kennedy seconds. All right, Denise.
I keep pressing the wrong button. Sorry.
Okay, Kennedy.
Aye.
Zena.
Aye.
Thelma.
Aye.
Anthony. Aye. The motion or the action to approve has been approved. So welcome, Betsy. And if I may say something on behalf of myself and the board, Betsy, your interest in wanting to be a full-time board member is a compliment to, I think, this organization. And your interest, your excitement, your passion over the years that you've worked with us has been fantastic. And I don't know if everyone knows, but I know because I talk to Farnaz on a regular basis, but you've been a great mentor, I think friend and supporter of Farnaz and what you've done to, I think, help her as a leader and help this organization has been fantastic. And I can tell you, I'm excited and very happy that you're part of this organization.
Thank you very much. I'm very honored by this, and I pledge to do my utmost to support all of you in the schools and the staff and the students and the parents. Yeah, and I don't, being a board member is very different than being a superintendent or a principal or a director or any of those things. So I'm gonna be on a learning curve, but thank you very much for your kind words. I appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you. All right. Any other comments before we move on? All right. I will turn it back over to...
I just want to say that I'm tremendously grateful for both your partnership and friendship and all that you've done for ECS to date as a partner at Lawndale and as a thought partner for us. And I'm looking forward to many years with your leadership and partnership. Thank you, Betsy.
Thank you very much. I feel the same way about you, Farnaz. I look up to your leadership and learned a lot from you. Look forward to working with you still.
I'll tell everyone else what I've told you before is that I had lunch with Betsy some time ago and I came home and I told my daughter that I had lunch with someone I want to be like when I grow up. It's a really gift. It's a good gift to have people like that in your life, and you have to find them and keep them close by. So thank you, Betsy. So with that, we are on to the college presentation with Roxanne. Roxanne, do you want to share your screen?
Yes, good evening. I think you are still sharing your screen.
You can jump right in and take it over from. Or I can do that.
Okay, I'm going to have Lucia do that for me.
I want to welcome Roxanne Solomita, who's leading counseling at ECHS Lawndale. We're so grateful for you to be here and to present on college acceptance. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. Good evening, everyone. So we're very proud to present some of our numbers from this past year, considering it was a very difficult year. There are a lot of points of pride for us, and lots of goals that we have moving forward. So if we could go to the next slide, please. So we already talked about our mission and went over the tenets that we value. One thing that I want to emphasize is that in our mission, it states that we want to prepare students to graduate from college, not just attend. Because what I've noticed over the years is there's a discrepancy. We're very proud of our acceptances. We're very proud of our commitments. Students start in the fall, and then there is a gap between that number and then the number of students who actually graduate. And we want to equip them to go to college and graduate from college so that they can be successful. Slide, please. So this is our team. This is the group of individuals that supported last year. So myself, Jessica Ceballos, the other 11th and 12th grade counselor, Lucia, Rachel, our alumni coordinator, and then Luz Leaños, who took over for our senior seminar, which is our college prep 12 class last year. So for our class of 2022, you'll see here pictured our valedictorian and our two salutatorians. They had identical GPAs, identical like class loads throughout all 4 years. And it wasn't a difficult decision to allow them both to be salutatorians, and they represented us very well at graduation. So here are some statistics from our class of 2022. There's 87% that qualify for free reduced lunch. We've got 68% of first gen students. Our gender is pretty balanced, and then our ethnicities are also below. So this is a chart that represents the amount of applications that students completed, not necessarily their commitments. And I've never presented for this before, so I don't know what numbers you're familiar with at this point. But the one thing that I would like to note and make sure that folks are aware that it's very intentional is the drop in the rate of private school applications. That was a very intentional piece. When I first started here, it was a graduation requirement to be accepted to a four-year university, which in itself is kind of like a wonderful way to go about things. And we started to notice that we were having students fill out applications for schools that were not realistic for them, and just to fulfill the requirement. And teachers and counselors were having to write, many, many letters of recommendations for these required applications for schools that students never really saw themselves at. And so we really want to be intentional. And yes, we would love every single one of our students to be accepted to a four-year university. And we acknowledge that that's just not always the best way to best support individual students. So we had a really great submission rate, 98%. We're always striving for 100. Last year was a very, very difficult year. Students had come back from the pandemic with no real sense of rigor, academic rigor. Usually their 11th grade year prepares them very well for their 12th grade year and all that's to come. And it was a little bit of a shock kind of for everyone to come back in that way. And we were prioritizing safety and health, and our students were still able to accomplish some really wonderful things. They were high achieving to begin with, and they were resilient throughout the pandemic. We also had over 40 individual meetings, which is a low number for us for financial aid meetings to have with individual families. And we picked up on that was probably like pandemic related as well. But we make a really big effort to have individual conversations with families to make sure that they understand all of the options that are out there and the ways that they can best support their student moving forward. So we had 98% of our class of 2022 accepted to a four-year university. Not all of them were given competitive enough financial aid packages. Not all of them got to attend their dream school, but we were very proud of this class. So next up, I'm gonna talk about where they ended up committing. These are some of our beautiful seniors at our graduation celebration. So class of 2021 and class of 2022, you'll see in bold on the right. 21 of our class of 2022 students ended up committing to go to a two-year college. 96 out of our approximately 120 students, or 125 students, I think, committed to a four-year university. And that's a really great number. That's something that we're really proud of. As you can see, it's our highest number yet. And it was during a very, very difficult year. And I'm also thinking about what's going to happen when they get to school after having the time throughout the pandemic. And that's why I really want to focus on that graduate aspect of our mission statement. And you will also see a drop in how many students have committed to a 2-year. And we see that as a positive thing due to the fact that statistically, students are much less likely to graduate within 4 to 6 years if they start at a 2-year college versus a 4-year college. So obviously, if they have only one option, we will support them in going that route. And if they have other options, we really want to support them in getting that head start so they're more likely to graduate and get their education funded. So as we go through here, we have 51 students committed to CSU universities. Cal State Dominguez Hills is always a school that supports our students with acceptances and financially. They give our students a significant amount of aid, which allows them to attend with very little financial stress. We had 34 UC commitments. We had the most amount of students go to Berkeley and UC San Diego than we've ever had in the past. Usually we have higher numbers at Riverside because, like Dominguez Hills, they accept our students in high numbers and give a lot of financial aid. And so we were very pleased that other schools were able to do that for our students this year. So only a handful of private school commitments. As I stated before, it's no longer a requirement to fill out the common application, which has really allowed us to be much more intentional in their senior seminar class in guiding them for what comes next, as opposed to having them fill out applications that are not realistic or attainable, accessible to them, just to fulfill a requirement. So we've got some pretty impressive schools on this list. And our valedictorian is the first ECHS graduate to attend Johns Hopkins University. And then we have 21 community college commitments, which is great. And it's a smaller number. And that is something that we're okay with for the reasons of, you know, we want them to graduate.
I have a question. It's Sina. I wanted to know, you know, your community college commitments, are they commitments with any of the transfer programs, like the TAP programs, to continue on to like UCLA or UC Davis, Irvine? Do we keep track of that or you don't know?
I don't know if we've kept track of like specifically the programs that they're in, but we do have them all apply for the South Bay Promise, which allows them to have their first 2 years paid for. And that's significant for a lot of them. We try to have them apply to like the honors programs and the transfer programs as well. The one that we make sure they do is the South Bay Promise. And then beyond that, it's really more about like, how much the student is like willing to put forth. We give them all of these options and sometimes they're not eligible for them. But we really also try to connect them with offices and counselors at El Camino, where most of our students end up going.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Nice to see you in there. So we're fortunate enough to have these scholarships opportunities for our students, and students filled out an application. The Bruce Greenspan Bridging the Gap Scholarship, they asked to give a handful of applicants and said they would pick 2 or 3 winners of the scholarship, and they ended up giving all of our applicants money. And it was a really beautiful thing because they worked hard on those applications and they deserved that money. And it was really wonderful to not have to choose between equally deserving students. And so, you know, moving forward, any opportunities we have for these scholarships, we welcome because we just love to provide for our students.
I have to do another shout out for Denise Berger here because she brought the Manhattan Beach United scholarship to us as well. Thank you, Denise.
Yes, thank you, Denise. That was awesome too, because that was specifically offered to our Black students, and only two applied, and those two were able to receive the scholarship. So I'm hoping for this year we start this process a little bit earlier, perhaps get some more applicants, perhaps have some more scholarship opportunities. So here's kind of a brief list of like how we go through the college process. We take the students through the CSU applications and UC applications in class during their senior seminar period. We have them fill out FAFSA together, or California Dream Act, whichever one applies to them. We have workshops for parents. Most of it is done in their senior seminar class, and that's a huge support. We do writing support for their personal statements. Sometimes they'll do multiple one-on-one meetings to make sure that their applications best represent them. And then we also partner with CARPE, College Access Network, which unfortunately, this will be our last year partnering with them because they are no longer going to be, I think their network is decreasing. I'm not sure exactly how that, I think it's a budgeting thing. And same with College Match LA. So we have College Match counselors come to our school and we have a cohort of students that are chosen for that. The number has decreased because of budgeting from College Match LA, which is disappointing. I had 20 applicants this year and only three were chosen. And last year, I think we had about eight. And we are still supporting our high achieving students. It's just, it's nice to have that extra support when we want to make sure that no one is not supported. So as stated before, CARPE has been a huge support for us. They're this giant college access network. They have many schools, and they've allowed us to really be intentional about our planning and come together as a team. They coach us, they provide resources, they have events that they send us to, such as the Black College Expo last year. and they've provided platforms such as Haymarket, which we've used for our alumni program, and we'll talk about in a few minutes, to communicate with our alumni. And so they will not be partnering with us. So we're looking to see where we can supplement that support moving forward, since it's been such a huge impact. So we're losing our partnership. As stated, so that's like the conferences, the resources, the coaching, just overall like holistic support is what they've provided us. And so I'm looking forward to figuring out a way to continue to have that support so that we can best serve our students. And then same with College Match LA, like the students that maybe would have been accepted if they had room, I wanna make sure that those students are getting the support that they themselves have earned at this point. So moving forward, we just wanna continue to strengthen our processes. This is what's coming up within the next few weeks. We have an information webinar next week, and then we've got our financial aid workshops. We'll be offering four of them in the month of October. The deadline is in March, and they also have like first come first serve at some schools. So we try to have all of our students fill it out as soon as it opens. We have a few extra supports this year. Michelle Quinto, in place of our AP position, which we weren't able to fill at this time. So she's been a huge support helping us out. Nyla and Brandy Davis are gonna help us out putting together an HBCU panel and coordinating the field trip to the Black College Expo. And then we have our growing alumni program. So I would like to invite Ms. Rachel Azila to speak on this program that she founded and coordinates. So Rachel, would you like to?
Sure, thank you. I just wanna say, this is my first time speaking to the board, and I'd like to thank you all very much for the work that you do to help our school continue to grow and to thrive, and the commitments that you make to make our schools better. I started in 2017, and my background's very similar to a lot of our students that go to the school. So I was very happy to be a part of ECHS and to be able to work in this type of a program. In 2017, one of the first things we did was an alumni survey that kind of informed us based off of our alumni, what their experience was, what we were doing well, what they felt that they needed support in. And so we had about 4 significant findings. One was that about 87% of our graduating seniors were first generation students, the very first in their families to go to college. And the second was that about 23%, close to 25%, felt that they were not mentored specifically about that whole college process, even though the school was college prep and there were clear expectations. For whatever reason, that portion of students felt that that wasn't communicated. We found that those students that had gone on to college, about 40% of them were not engaging with any college resources. So not going to a study lab, not doing office hours with their professor, not attending a club on campus, absolutely nothing. They would go to their lectures and then go back home if they were commuting, or go back to their dorm room, and they would just kind of grind out and do their work. They were performing well academically, but they were not engaging in their college campuses. And then the last finding we had, which was pretty amazing, was about 94% of our alumni were willing to give back and to be mentors with our school, with other students at our school. I just want to say that is phenomenal. When Dave was talking about that whole reciprocal type of process, that's what makes that possible. If our teachers and our staff and our counselors were not doing the work that they were doing, that would not be available to us. And so that was phenomenal. And based off of that type of those findings, we decided to do sort of like a 2-prong approach for our alumni program. One was to support our students through to the completion of graduation of college. And a lot of what that meant was kind of being that bridge during the summertime after they've graduated and getting them through into their college environments and plugging into the resources on their college campuses. So even before classes begin, like understanding the importance of that. And also the second part was also cultivating the younger professionals who were graduating from school to then come back to ECHS and begin to springboard their professional careers in a nurturing environment, and at the same time giving back to our schools with their new knowledge and their new skills and their gifts and abilities. So part of that college engagement or sort of trying to help with the messaging of mentorship and preparation for college, because ECHS being basically the only place that gives them a reference point for college and what that means for them, was doing college workshops, college transition workshops with Senior STEM, partnering with Senior STEM, doing, having like information sessions for universities to come in and speak to our students, doing college panels, not just with students, but also with parents, parent to parent, talking to parents about how do you support your student going on to this environment and not sabotaging them unknowingly, kind of thing. Also, we started our social media campaigns we did some of our college transition work was around imposter syndrome and what that means, kind of going into these college environments and understanding this institution may not have been created with you in mind originally, but also how you can plug into these resources and make the best of what you can do. Our alumni mentor program is a peer-to-peer program. So it's mentors of our alumni working with our students transitioning to college. So they're sort of those resources for them to talk to about being prepared for school and going on to, you can change the slide to the next slide so they can kind of see a little bit. So those are our alumni. They work directly with the students virtually and also in person. They are over the social media campaign in terms of talking about, you know, what's happening in their lives at school and advice to students so that they know what to expect and where they can go for support. What else do we have? Do we have another slide there? Okay. So because time is up basically, but one of the things that we also do is continue to put out information to get more feedback about how to support our alumni. The other thing we do is we've had an alumni day where our alumni come back, do panels, and also do workshops to kind of have more talks with students based off of subject matter that they're interested in, like safety on campus, wellness, how to secure more financial resources once you're in school. What do you do for, what's the other one? Imposter syndrome, like how do you deal with being in this new environment? So the alumni themselves facilitate these workshops and talk to the graduating seniors going on to school. And if moving forward, if what we could do would be, it would be great to expand Alumni Day so that it's also kind of dovetailing in with what Roxanne was talking about with honoring the career paths of students that might not all traditionally be interested in going to a four-year university, but can have secure like a good post-secondary education, maybe in the trades or in some other way that still would yield them a successful path in their life if that's what they want to do. And then also the creation of, we're doing this year, creating a committee with our alumni to help with projects that will engage our more professional alumni to be able to hopefully open up doors for bringing back financial resources and fundraising. Also, the last thing would be great is if we could establish our own alumni scholarship fund and also an alumni emergency fund, because we did an alumni emergency fund during COVID, during the pandemic, and it was really helpful to our alumni who were going on to, who were struggling at that time with college. So I'm sorry, there's a lot to say, there's a lot going on, but I know we're running out of time and I don't want to take up your time, but it's really good work being done here. And it wouldn't, what I'm doing wouldn't be possible if there wasn't that love and that care and the respect and the expectations that are held with our students in the high school and even beyond for those students who come from those middle schools coming into the high schools and stuff. So there's something really special happening at our school that allows us, we have so much potential to do a lot. That's
all. Thank you so much, Roxanne and Rachel. It feels like you've been presenting this information for years. Thank you for being here. Any quick questions? I want to get us back on agenda time, but any quick questions for the college team?
I have a question.
Yes, Kennedy.
What have you seen in terms of the impact on the summer melt? So all these wonderful programs you described, the panels, the workshops, the social media, have you been able to measure the impact on the summer melt?
Yes. I'm sorry. I get excited. Roxanne, go ahead. You can jump in after me, but I have to say, one of the things, you know, that Roxanne had mentioned First of all, just the change that you see in our students going to choosing four-year schools over the two-year community college, that's a big leap. And a big part of that is because students are believing in the resources that are available to hold them at that four-year level, that they can be successful in transitioning to those schools. So the messaging is being much more clarified for them to be able to engage. The other thing I wanna say that our students, even when they went to the two-year schools, we saw statistically, I believe Robert Maxwell had shared that we had about an 80% success rate for our students to go on to four-year schools and to complete their education. So like I said, once again, there's something that we're doing right to message and support and have students believe in their resilience to complete their education. And we've started to also administer the alumni survey annually. So it will help to provide a clearer picture about these different transitions now that we've kind of implemented more of the, or been more careful about our messaging and efforts in those ways to be able to see, you know, what that's looking like.
Yeah, I'll just say one thing. Oh, sorry, go for it.
No, go ahead, go ahead.
I just wanted to say that Carpe has really helped us out with our summer melt initiatives, and they give us like coaching over the summer as well. And Rachel has been like leading the communication. So we use Haymarket to send out text messages, and students can reply with their specific individual questions. And that's been huge because a lot of times they just don't know where to go, don't know who to ask, don't know what office to call. And a simple text is what they're most comfortable with as far as communication. Something that I've noticed over the years is former students will like email me and say, hey, can you help me with my FAFSA again? So there's something like Rachel said, there's something happening here. And I think it has a lot to do with the increase and intentionality of the communication.
Also with Haymarket, customize the school prompts for specific universities. So we had a large percentage of our students going to Cal State University Dominguez Hills. And so we were able to customize notifications for them over the summer, like when to get certain things in or what they should be doing so that they absolutely know what steps to take during the summertime. In between, especially before they're connecting with their mentor and having that one-to-one support. So it's been an amazing tool to use that in particular over the summer, especially. But we use it all year long. We use it all throughout the year.
Your enthusiasm is palpable. I really sincerely appreciate it, Rachel. And can I bug you guys to put your email addresses into the chat so that if anyone has any additional questions for you, they can follow up with questions. And if there are any trends of questions, if you can share them back with me and I'll share them with the whole board, that would be awesome. With that, I want to hand off to Dorothy for our financial presentation.
Okay. Okay, so this is a very long presentation, but we had finance committee, so I'm going to skip over some. So if you have questions on the ones I'm skipping, please feel free to jump in. All right, so first we're gonna start with last year. High level, if you just wanna know, these are the changes from what the board saw in June and how we ended up reporting to the authorizers in August. And you'll see at each of the schools, there's this big drop called HH. It's hold harmless, which I'm gonna just jump into like right now. We talked a lot about it last year. So what happened was in 1920, you know, regular school year, we reported the actual ADA. 2021, we ended up, you know, either no one reported ADA anywhere, and schools got funded based on 1920, or they had a waiver application, which none of the environmental schools did. And then last year we were operating under the assumption it would work the same, that it would just be like, oh, okay, we'll get whatever money, whatever ADA they use in 2021. But when the legislature actually approved it, it ended up being a little bit different, and there were these two different calculations. So in terms of a timeline, you know, in the spring we thought we included all of Hold Harmless in the school's forecast in that fiscal year. The state budget got approved, then we saw the trailer bill language, and it was a little confusing. And it took a while for the auditors to digest and determine how it should be handled. But essentially, before we submitted the unaudited actuals, we were told by the school's auditor we could not include any of it. That's why we took it out. And then earlier this month, when the auditor felt, you know, whatever internal committees and approvals, they said the one of the two parts we had to include in last year. So that's the attendance part. There's an attendance part, which kind of just corrects for the attendance percentage. And then there's a second part that corrects for enrollment, where you can get paid the difference between what your ADA was last year and what you got funded the year before. And it's more complicated than that, but essentially there are these two different parts. This part we have to include in last year. This part we have to include in this year. So visually, what does this look like? So the green is the operating income for what we reported for these three schools to the authorizers. And then the blue is the audit adjustment portion. And you'll see this in the audit report. And normally we don't have audit adjustments this large, but this is, the circumstances were unusual. And then in total, this just breaks out the fiscal year portions for each school. So you can see, you know, most of it is going to be in last year. And then some of it, depending on what the school's numbers, will be in this fiscal year. Are there any questions on this? Okay. Essentially high level on the state budget, there are these two buckets of funding, which the board will see again, because both of these chunks of funding have to be board approved. And they have multi-year spending timelines. So just to give you an idea, it's a lot of money. Obviously, it's based on school size as well as the specific population, but there's a lot of money to be spent. So moving to this fiscal year, this is high level the numbers of what we changed. So for Lawndale, you can see there's this big adjustment for LCFF, mainly because, and you'll see this on each of the schools, because when the board approved the budget, we only assumed a 9.84% COLA, but it ended up being 12.84. So you'll see this at every school because we were more conservative. And then the school ended up, and then this is the Hold Harmless and some one-time funding, and then some additional expenses. I would just comment mainly, I guess, on the staffing, you know, related to from what Tomas talked about earlier. So there are some additional positions that were added in comparison to what the school thought they would staff in the fall. At Gardena, it's very similar, the big adjustment because of the COLA. We had some savings in classified as to these positions ended up just a change in how the school went to staff, right? So they changed their mind on student services, college readiness, and this extra para. And then there were some additional expenses in certificated related to a long-term sub and college readiness. In Inglewood, I guess the biggest increase is in the classified, and this was for extra positions for SPED paras, two SPED paras, two ELD paras, and a substitute. And then at the high school in Gardena, We ended up adding a bunch of expenses. So the biggest increase, or sorry, the biggest decrease in the school's operating income was in certificated. So this had to do with salaries being adjusted up. And then we added a SPED position and an enrichment teacher. And then we did also adjust ADA down by 8.5. So this is a drop in revenue for that. Just a look at cash. We know and we're very careful with the high school in Gardena. I mean, this is just a normal tight, cash is very tight for any new squirrel, and especially as they are growing a grade. Are there any questions?
No? Any questions for Dorothy or Tracy? I just want to thank both Dorothy and Tracy for all the hard work you do on this every month. We really appreciate you guys and all your hard work. So with that, I'm going to share screen. And we are now right on to the study session. As you can see, we're about 18 minutes behind here. So Danielle and I are going to have to catch up some time on our presentation. We'll try to go as fast as we can with that. So we wanted to make sure that all of our board members are conscious of what we're doing in our priority work. And for those of you who are new to us, you might not be familiar with the fact that we are, every year we focus on one or two, and then sometimes three priorities that everyone in the organization is conscious of and working towards throughout the year. And it's based on an expectation that if we really focus on something, we can become better at it over time. And it also builds the muscle of when you focus on something, you can build that strength. So this is ECS. We try to do a lot, and we do a lot. And a few years ago, we presented this slide to everyone. We try to do well on all fronts to achieve this really incredible mission that we're very dedicated to. And this can be overwhelming to work here, especially with a lot of people who are very alpha and perfectionist and always working to do everything as well as possible. We thought about if we picked one thing each year that we as an entire organization focus on, how would that feel? In our first year, which was the year prior to COVID, in that same year, we focused on reading apprenticeship framework across subjects area grades 6 through 12. And we really got off to a beautiful start with this priority. It was so exciting to have the entire organization be able to speak about instruction in the same way and have the same language and framework in place across all content area. And then COVID happened, and we never really got to see the results of the work that we did in this year because of the unfortunate, couldn't do testing in that year in the same way. In 2021, we expanded to three priorities. We had to do distance learning, took over almost everything. There was a lot of focus on safety. We confronted anti-Blackness and racism with the death of George Floyd and the awakening of our country. It was clear that we couldn't just really focus on having 20 people who cared about anti-Blackness and racism in our organization through the diversity and equity committee of our board, but we really wanted to bring everyone along. And for those of you, most of our board members were here for that and engaged in multiple sessions, both at the board and the all staff level. We're really grateful for that. Just so you know, new board members, if you're interested in participating in this, we're doing a refresher for all staff who have just joined. And we welcome you to participate in that, and we can send you the invitation for that. And then, of course, it was the continuation of our reading apprenticeship work. Last year, We built on the work that we did to confront anti-Blackness and racism, and we really focused on one of the tenets of Black wellness that were shared by us by Dr. Candace Watson and Dr. Tiffany Marie, which is what would happen in instruction if every child felt like they were a blessing in our schools at all times. And we really tried to conquer that priority through our advisory program by strengthening advisory to really reinforce that tenet. And we want to implement best practices that we learned for instruction through the pandemic, the new best practices. As you look at this chart, you can see how we went from a single priority to three priorities, and how when you really have multiple priorities, you really never feel like you're accomplishing anything as well as you would like to. And in this year, we really wanted to hone in on one. So I'm going to hand off to Danielle.
Thank you, Farnaz. Hi, everybody. Danielle Kelsick, for those of you I haven't met, Chief Academic Officer. And yeah, that was our story. I think just if you go back one more slide, Farnaz, one thing that you didn't mention is that last year, although we only set two priorities, there was a third unnamed priority that actually was probably the priority, which was safely returning kids and staff back to the classroom and in classroom learning. And that was that, although we had goals of focusing on instruction and making every child feel like a blessing, and we made gains in that way, a huge, colossal amount of resources went to COVID safety. So this year, we have committed as an organization to go back to one priority. And that one priority really stems from this single concept underlined and bolded in our mission statement, which is our commitment to prepare critical thinkers. When Roxanne earlier was talking about how we want kids to be able to graduate from college, and then the second part of that sentence is, and create a more equitable and sustainable world, what's the one thing that we do that gets them ready for that? And one thing that pretty much staff and from all across the organization at different levels, classroom teachers, subjects, regardless, is teaching critical thinking. If we can teach our students to think critically, then they will be prepared to graduate, navigate, and be successful in college and beyond. So if you go to the next slide, this is the priority that we've agreed on for this year. We want ECS teachers to engage in planning for critical thinking, PCT, for every class that they teach. And that is, it sounds simple, but it's complex to do that and to organize all of the instructional staff across ECS on that one focal point is our work this year. So what we want to do now is give you a little bit of an opportunity to engage with this priority plan. Farnaz, if you can go back to that previous slide for me. So what we're going to do is give you 7 minutes on your own to read this document that I just put in the chat. This is a copy of our priority plan. And it kind of walks you through the rationale, the background, and some of our thinking around how we're going to do this thing. So what I'd like you to do is, once we start the clock, read this priority plan. It's 2 pages, and identify a golden line. And on the right-hand side of this slide, it kind of walks you through what is a golden line. So one line of text that is meaningful to you for a variety of reasons, or any one of the reasons listed in the right-hand side. Then after we've got that independent time for individual reading, processing, and selecting a golden line, we're going to put you in a breakout room with a partner to talk about what golden line did you pick, why did you choose it, and maybe what questions do you have for us. And then we'll come back as a whole group to talk through some of those questions. And that might be a little abbreviated, but we hope to generate some questions. If we can provide answers, we will, and or we'll come back to them at a future board meeting. Does that make sense, the directions? Can I answer any questions? can you click on that link in the chat and make sure that you have access? You can open it and read it. If you can't, let me know if you have any access problems. Okay. If not, take some silent time now to read and look for your golden line. And then after that, we'll send you in a breakout room to discuss it with a partner. Okay, it's been 5 minutes, and I wonder if you might be ready with a golden line to talk to a partner. If you are, can you put a thumbs up in your screen or that if you're ready to start talking? Okay, we'll take another minute and a half. Find your golden line, and then Farnaz will open breakout rooms.
Okay, are you ready? I'm going to go ahead and open.
Okay, before you open, remember your job when you're in groups, you've got 8 minutes to share your golden line, why you chose it, and then come back to the whole group with any questions or comments that you want to bring back to the larger discussion.
Just to reinforce, how many minutes, Danielle?
Eight.
8 minutes. Okay.
Hey, Geneva.
Hi, Jeremiah.
Hey, how's it going for you?
It's good. It's good. Dinner time.
Oh, yes, that's right.
You got two little ones on the floor, so it's just a juggling a lot.
I hear you.
So I may just have to pass on the breakout room if that's okay.
Yeah, sure. I just wanted to check. And I'm meeting with you tomorrow morning, right?
Yes, I have a couple of good things. My son said hello.
Oh, hello there.
Yes.
Well, I'll catch up with you then.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Geneva.
Of course.
Hi.
Hey, I feel like we've talked about this before.
What?
It was at the all staff meeting.
You talking know, about this document?
Yeah.
Yes, we have. Yeah, you don't have to share your golden line unless you want to. You can tell me what you're going with.
Well, I read through it again, and I mean, I really like that line that says, when their teachers ask them to grapple with complex texts and other things of that nature, that we want students to utilize the toolbox of critical thinking strategies. You know, I really like that, that framing of that. It's a toolbox, you know, that it's like something that there's multiple ways you can use critical thinking. I don't, you know, I probably thought of critical thinking as something you generally do, but if you have specific strategies and you learn that way, you probably will have a much bigger toolbox, you know? And when I was growing up, I didn't have a toolbox. I think it had to be more organic. So I think it sounds really awesome.
Yeah, that mine is the line right after yours. The by the time they graduate, we want them to blah, 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 blah. The last part is the part that I love the most, like without a roadmap or a set of step-by-step instructions, which is kind of connected to the toolbox, right? That like, yeah, we help them in school, but ultimately when they leave us, they have to be able to figure out what tool to pull and or what problem they're solving or, right? And they have to be able to figure out their own step-by-step and they have to make their own roadmap. And I feel like that's the reality, whether, you know, whether they're ready for it or not, that's what they're expected to do. And so like, it feels like our really important work to get them ready for that, that inevitability.
Yeah, that reminds me of our conversation at lunchtime, that, you know, the changing world landscape that we have and what students are going to be doing coming out of school.
Yeah. So I wasn't going to participate because it's dinner time, but I heard a part, I haven't opened the document at the moment. I've seen it many times, but the part that's really starting to resonate with me is that we're also helping students see that also, even though they may have roadblocks of being like English learners or students with exceptionalities, and so therefore being graded on their proficiency of academic English, but to be able to still be acknowledged to be critical thinkers, I think is a big deal because it's like for those who are newcomers, they're like, I don't want to hurt their feelings, but baby, there's no expectation for you to reclassify before you graduate from my school. But to be able to show you that even with where you are in your language, that you're able to show critical thinking skills based on the tools that we're able to equip you with, like, wow, you know what I mean?
That, Geneva.
Yeah, it's just like that is going to get there and the world's probably always going to make you feel some type of way, but we're going to help you leave with a level of confidence no matter on this, you know, as we're reimagining education. I'm getting goosebumps because like we're reimagining what proficiency really means and that's based on what the systemic oppressive way is. So as a deficit lens versus, you know,
what you're getting. I like that because in some ways you're framing it, because saying critical thinking for all could feel like, oh, that's not possible, these kids can't do it. But what you're saying is like, no, everybody's capable of critical thinking. How are you going to be able to show
because if we're saying that you can't because you don't have academic English, but say that you turn around and decide to be a translator or decide to just live in Mexico or live wherever they speak Spanish, now you are speaking their language.
Yeah.
And you still have this critical thinking skills. So it's like right here, right now, where we are, you may have areas that you may struggle, but everyone, we're trying to get them to a level of critical thinking. And I think that's what makes it special.
I think that's cool. I love that. We got to tease that out more and get it into the conversation.
But yes, okay, back to the
dinner. Yeah, back to dinner. I got to turn a light on. It's getting dark behind me. Hi there.
Hi, no one ever came. I waited. But it's okay. I know that I didn't want to interrupt you, Jeremiah, but maybe they're sending them my way, but it's okay.
Oh, well, welcome to this room. Yeah. Sorry, you didn't get a partner. Sorry about that.
Do you want to share your golden line?
Yeah, do you have a line you want to tell us about?
I do. I had it ready. Let me go to my notes. It's toward, I didn't write it where it came from, but definitely towards the beginning, you know, what talks about how our current approach to instruction does not ensure that our students consistent daily practice they need, become conscious and critical thinkers, equipped to take on the challenge of creating more equitable and sustainable So that just kind of, you know, was my golden line.
Yeah, I think that's connected to what we were just talking about before you joined, is like the reality is, no matter where our kids are when they come to us, sorry, that's my timer. No matter where kids are when they arrive at our school, by the time they leave us, they have to be able to do this stuff independently. And so, like, excuses about where they are or what we've struggled with as an organization, like, it doesn't really matter. Like, we've got to, if this has been a historical challenge, we have to address it, because the fact is, when they go to high school, if they're coming from middle, or when they go to college, they have to be able to navigate it themselves.
I agree.
You know what else I liked, Danielle, I didn't mention to you before in this room, is the line that starts with our vision. Well, it starts with, when we put never before seen problems.
Uh-huh.
Right. And that the end of that line, it's talking about innovative solutions independently and in collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just like, that's another way to look at critical thinking, that it, you know, it's a both and activity, you know, it's like, you need to have that individual toolbox, but you also want to be able to influence and express it amongst other people, right? And it's very right on.
Yeah. And I think that part of it is, I think ECS is really already good about the in collaboration. It's the independent part that we need to hold ourselves accountable to. I think our kids are really good at working together and collaborating and solving problems together, and that's an important skill. But I think the thing that we need to make sure of is that every kid can also do it independently.
Right.
Hey, JG, are you a host? Can you close the rooms?
Yeah. Oh, they're going to close in 3 seconds.
Oh, okay. Okay. Oh, there we go. There we go.
Right on
time. Welcome back. Welcome back. So we don't have much time right now to talk, like to have a big Q&A, but I would love, if there's some questions that were coming up in your conversation, I'd love to open it up for those. And then before we shift, I have one like kind of progress report that I can share about how it's going so far. But what questions, if any came up?
I have just a question about, and I don't need it answered tonight, but I probably had 20 or 30 questions, but one was where are people in the process right now? Because just I'll leave it at that. You know, how many with new teachers, for example.
I have a slide this is what I wanted to close on, but let me show it to you right now. Are you seeing a screen with numbers in a chart? No?
I probably will when I, there we go.
Sorry, I forgot to share my screen. That would be an important step for people to see what I'm talking about. So here, this is some progress so far that we have. So on the left is just kind of talking through, the first part is teacher perception. As we launched this priority in the summer PD, our goal was that 85% of teachers felt ready to implement that protocol that you saw. And 70% said they did feel ready at the end of summer PD. So we didn't meet the mark, but we did pretty well. It felt good. Despite the fact that, like you said, Betsy, we have a lot of brand new teachers, new to the organization or new to the profession, some both. And then our other goal was that 85% of teachers understood the connection between planning for critical thinking, daily lesson planning, and students actually doing critical thinking. So doing critical thinking and planning for it and executing, those aren't all the same thing. Our goal was 85, and 95% of teachers saw the link. So that was really exciting to us. Although they didn't all feel prepared at that same rate, they all recognized the importance of this priority and how critical this is to serving our mission, serving our students, and preparing them for the next stage of their lives. So that was really exciting. The numbers underneath that go to like, okay, infrastructure. How are we doing in terms of our teachers sharing their unit plans so that they're accessible to other people on their teams and even teachers from across the organization? Our goal was 80% of teachers would get there by the end of summer PD. We got to 76% by the start of school year, and right now we're at 93%. So that's really exciting. And for us, it's especially exciting as we now have two middle schools and two high schools. So there's this really compelling reason to share resources and planning tools across the organization. And then on the right, this graph shows you week by week, those steps on the protocol that you saw. So step one is unpacking the student text or task. So the thing you ask students to do, teachers do it first and use that to plan instruction. And what you can see as the weeks go by, we're making some progress. More and more teachers are doing it. And then the blue bar represents the percentage of teachers, really courses for which there are daily lesson plans complete and accessible in that unit plan. So these are some exciting indicators that we're making progress and we're growing. It also tells us where we need to push and provide examples, give more support and accountability to teachers and staff. I think we might be out of time. So I don't know, Farnaz, if there's any time for more questions.
I think we can take one more question.
Okay, and I'll also put my email in the chat. So if you had a question prepped and if we don't get to it, you can email me. Anyone have one more question they want to ask?
Okay. I appreciate you all. Thank you, Danielle, for leading that conversation. I do want to add that every year we survey our teachers and our staff about how aligned they think their priority is with the needs of the school and the community at this time. And I would say that it was hot in the high 90s that they thought that this was the right priority for this year. And the launch of this year's priority and the focus on it was the best I've seen yet. So it's very exciting to see it. And I want to appreciate Danielle's ability to focus and the support that she has through Charity and Jane to really implement this priority in a different way. So we're very, very excited for where this is going. So thank you, Danielle. We will be building on this at the next board meeting. We have strategic priority benchmark charts to share with you all to show you the data that we're tracking on a monthly basis. After this meeting, I'm going to share this presentation, the benchmark charts, and give you time to sort of live with them for the next month and a half so that you can really think about them and ask questions. I'll add one more thing that at the Charter School Growth Fund, I shared our strategic priorities benchmark chart that came out of conversations with all of you and the work that we've done together for years. And there's now like 30 plus schools that are launching benchmark charts, not unlike ours, based on the work that we've done together and people who are utilizing it all the time. So I just want to appreciate the fact that we are sharing best practices in this way. So with that, I'm going to take us back to our agenda. We have some things to approve and we can move forward. Thank you all. So we are here on consent items A and A through M.
Yes. So for those who are new to this process, on the consent items, we typically approve all of them at one time. And so we first take a motion to approve, and then we open it up to comments, questions, concerns before we vote. And so with that, if I can get a motion to approve consent items A through M.
I motion to approve items A through M.
Thank you, Denise. Do I have a second?
Zena, I second.
Oh. Hello?
Yes, we got a second. So if we can open it up for discussion or conversation, if there's anything anyone wants to provide insight on or ask questions about.
All I can say is that all of these consent agenda items are things that are pretty regular for our work. So we wouldn't put them here if they weren't regular and standard operating, or if they weren't first reviewed by our finance committee or our governance committee. We feel like we've sort of dug into them, and things that are of more import that are being presented for the first time that are not sort of consistent with regular day-to-day work will be covered as action items.
Yes. Thank you, Fernandez, for that explanation. Okay, before we start voting one last time, any questions, concerns, comments? Okay, with that, Denise. You're on mute.
Aye.
Okay, thank you. Kennedy.
Aye.
Zena.
Aye.
Thelma.
Aye.
Betsy, your first vote.
Aye.
And Anthony, aye. Consent items A through M have been approved. Thank you. Moving on to the action items, just as a reminder to those and information for the new people, we go through each one of these individually, give those people identified an opportunity to discuss the item, and then we will vote on them individually. So with that, I will ask Tracy and Fernaz to give any insight information they want to regarding action item A.
So I believe, Tracy, are you here? No. I told Tracy she should go ahead and go, given that she has little humans. But we did present this to the Finance Committee, but we are bringing it here as an action item because it is a significant revision to budgets. And it's standard operating to bring that as an action item. The revisions are very much associated with positions we were able to find and hire and positions we were not able to hire, and also budget adjustments to some of the things that we talked about in terms of recruitment, finding fees for hard to find positions, and then also that's primarily it. So our budget revisions are minimal as compared to prior years, and they have been reviewed and approved by the Finance Committee.
Any questions, comments, concerns regarding action item A before we move to motion and vote? Okay, do I have a motion to approve the 22-23 revised budgets for each of the four schools?
So moved.
Thank you, Kennedy. Do I have a second?
Zena, second.
Thank you, Zena. Denise?
Aye.
Kennedy?
Aye.
Zena?
Aye.
Thelma?
Aye.
Betsy?
Aye.
And Anthony, aye. Action item A has been approved. Moving on to action item B, approving the ECS civility policy. Fernaz, do you want to discuss that? I know we discussed it.
Yes, this went to governance committee. I wanted to sort of frame it for you all. It's a policy that we hope not to need to use. But earlier this year, we did have an interaction with a parent who was really uncivil with one of our employees and created a very uncomfortable working space for the employee. And we did go to legal and seek guidance on like, how can we handle situations like this to protect our employees and help them to feel safe? And our attorney brought to our attention that many districts throughout the country have implemented civility policies, especially in this highly tense and political environment, it's become more necessary in board meetings and things like that. So the civility policy is something that would allow us, it really goes to only Danielle and I to have the ability to determine if a parent has gone above and beyond in being uncivil to a student, to an employee or to a school site, to ask them to not be on campus for a period of time. And I left it to go to the chief academic officer and to myself for the reason that I don't want it to be something that we do as a spur of the moment thing or in a reaction to a heated conversation, but that it's something that that takes our leadership team to discuss and to act upon. But I did think it's something that could protect us in the future. And it will be something we will use cautiously if ever, if we need to protect the safety of our staff.
Thank you, Fernandez. Any questions, comments, concerns regarding action item B, disability policy? Disability policy. Sometimes difficult to say. Okay, with that, do I have a motion to approve action item B?
I move to approve action item B.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
Second that motion. Denise?
Thank you. Denise?
Aye.
Kennedy?
Aye.
Zena?
Aye.
Thelma?
Aye.
Betsy?
Aye.
And Anthony? Aye. The civility policy has been approved. Is there, was that it, or is there one more? That was it, yes.
That was it. And so now we go to upcoming dates and announcement. Our next board meeting is on December 8th. Our goal is to have these board meetings every 2 months as planned. They should be on your calendars. Our upcoming committee meetings are listed below. And I would like to put out there that we may be needing an additional board member to serve on the Menlo Charter Property Board, which is our sister board that oversees our property management and facilities updates and the work that we do in the facilities realm. And if anyone on the board is at all interested in learning about that, I welcome anyone who wants to work and collaborate on that, because we do have an opening. Ken Deemer has been serving on that committee for many years, and we need another board member based on the guidelines of that committee. So please reach out to me if you're at all interested. With that, I wanted to go ahead and open up for appreciations that anyone has. I'm going to stop sharing so we can see each other.
Hi, it's Denise. I really appreciated the pivot that the college team made in not getting hung up on the status of applying to private schools at the expense of it being meaningful to each and every student, and owning that, you know, there was that percentage dip because that's part of a valid strategy. So thank you.
And hi, this is Kennedy. I really wanted two appreciations. One is for Fernandez. I feel, and I shared this with Allison, I feel like every year you just get better and better, and you're just so confident and so poised. So just, you know, I just had to send kudos to you and your team. And then just congratulations on these amazing college acceptance and commitment reports. I mean, to me, you guys are like, oh yeah, whatever, this is what we do. But it's like, wow, this is huge. Not a lot of people do it to this level of excellence. And just, I'm just like tickled pink to know that you guys are not just preparing the students, but you're actually getting them through college, and then they become these world leaders and changers. And it's like, it's such a privilege to be part of this organization. Amazing work.
I want to thank Thelma for being here on behalf of Lundell. We really appreciate your presence. I want to thank Michael Martucci, who's our director of student services, for all the work that he's done to recruit special ed teachers. He's gone above and beyond and has had a tremendous impact. Herb, for being here and considering joining our board. Denise, for bringing him. Denise, you've been a tremendous resource finder for us, and I want to appreciate you. In my breakout room with Herb, he already shared 4 resources, so he's going to be an asset to our students. Betsy, for joining our board, thank you so much again. And to Danielle and Jeremiah and Allison, you guys are just amazing partners in this work. We've had a crazy, crazy couple of weeks, and I feel intensely grateful for the people that I get to work with every day. And the fact that we get to see these little humans from time to time on Zoom is a gift as well. So thank you. Hi, Kira.
Hi, Kira.
Hi, Jackson.
I want to thank those on this call who are parents who have young little humans, and they're taking their time this evening to be with us when they could be spending time with their family. So thank you for making us part of your evening.
Hey, Bo.
Can you see the baby?
Hi, Kira. Hi. I've seen before.
You have.
Hi, Judy. Oh, thank you guys so much. I feel really, really grateful to be part of this community, guys. Thank you. I hope you have a wonderful day, evening, and I'll stay on if anyone has any questions, but okay, have a wonderful evening.
We do need to adjourn.
Oh, we didn't adjourn. Sorry, yes.
Please, board members, don't leave yet.
Don't leave yet. We have to adjourn formally.
This is my job. okay, on that note, one, thank you, everyone, for being here this evening and taking the time. With that, can I get a motion to adjourn the meeting?
I motion to adjourn, Denise.
Thank you, Denise. Can I get a second?
Hey, second, Zena.
Thank you, Zena. All right, Denise.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Zena.
Aye.
Thelma.
Aye.
Betsy.
Aye.
And Anthony. Aye. Meeting has been adjourned. Have a wonderful evening, everyone. Take care. Be safe.
Hi, Herb. Good to see you.
Good to see you, Denise. Thank you.
Bye.